Picture this. Like, I really want to transport you to a very specific moment in time. The date is June 9, 2026.
Right.
We're in Beijing. It's just a standard Tuesday. But on the desks of, you know, provincial tech officials and top executives at state-owned enterprises all across the country.
A huge government memo just lands.
Exactly. A memo lands. And this isn't your standard dry bureaucratic reading material meant to just be filed away in some cabinet.
No, not at all.
It's a joint directive from the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the body that oversees literally all industrial policy, and the State-Owned Asset Supervision and Administration Commission. And inside this document is a hard, unyielding deadline, like bold ink, November 30, 2026.
Yeah, and that deadline comes attached to an incredibly aggressive quota. I mean, the mandate requires the deployment of 10,000 humanoid robots.
10,000? That's massive.
Right, and they aren't deploying them into sterilized research labs or into controlled exhibition halls just for a quick photo op. These 10,000 machines must be deployed into real-world, high-value, entirely messy industrial environments.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because today, our mission for this deep dive is to really extract the vital insights from our research about this radical shift happening literally as we speak.
Yeah, we are basically watching the end of the era of the cool robot demo.
Right, the era where a machine does a backflip on a padded stage and everyone claps. We are entering an era of massive state-mandated field deployment. And this shift, it's generating a dynamic that could completely alter the global tech landscape for the rest of the century.
Totally. But to understand why this specific memo is so seismic, we first have to look at the underlying philosophy driving it. There is this specific Chinese term that serves as the engine for this entire initiative, and it's called Xijing Shixin.
Okay, so in practice, what does that actually translate to for the robotics industry?
It translates to real scene, real training. And here is why you, listening to this, should care deeply about that concept.
Yeah, why does this matter so much?
Well, the entire field of embodied AI, which is artificial intelligence housed inside a physical moving machine, it's currently facing a massive wall called the sim-to-real gap.
Right, because for years we've trained robots inside pristine computer simulations.
Exactly, but a physics engine on a computer just cannot perfectly replicate the chaos of the physical world.
I mean, a simulation doesn't account for, like, a factory floor with a tiny puddle of spilled hydraulic fluid.
No, it doesn't.
Or a sudden change in overhead lighting when a cloud passes over the sun. Or a human worker unexpectedly dropping a wrench right in the robot's path.
And that chaos is the gold mine. Embodied AI only gets smarter through messy physical trial and error.
So they need the real world.
Yeah, encountering a slightly misaligned car door and figuring out how to adapt in real time. That is infinitely more valuable for training an AI model than a million flawless simulated repetitions.
It really is the difference between reading a textbook on how to swim while sitting in a dry classroom versus actually being thrown into the ocean with the waves crashing over your head. You don't truly learn until you feel the water.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
What this memo does is effectively mandate that 10,000 robots be thrown into the ocean simultaneously.
Wow.
It is an enforced extraction of real-world data on a scale that the industry has literally never even attempted.
So, setting the table for our roadmap today, we're going to explore how a unique blend of government mandates, surprisingly creative financial engineering, and cutting-edge hardware is creating this massive data gap in the global AI race.
We're going to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah. We are going to take you inside specific world-leading battery factories, enormous logistics hubs, and even foreign medical centers to see how this plays out on the floor.
And I think the best place to start is the actual mechanism the government is using to force this reality into existence.
Yeah.
Because it's not a polite request.
Right. It's a mandate.
Exactly. This directive acts as a forced matchmaking service. It pairs the engineers building the robots directly with the industrial buyers running the factories. And it gives them a shared deadline.
It feels a bit like a university professor handing out a massive group project and forcing two very different departments to work together.
That's pretty much it.
The government is essentially saying you, the factory, will buy the hardware from you, the robot maker, and you will both report your productivity results by November 30th.
Right.
But looking at the reality of a factory floor, I immediately see a massive friction point here.
Oh, the liability.
Yeah. If I am a factory manager, my entire job depends on keeping the assembly line moving. My biggest fear is that this experimental $100,000 robot is going to drop a highly sensitive component, jam the line, and just cost my company millions in lost revenue.
And the architects of the policy anticipated that exact fear. To solve it, the directive includes a comprehensive package known as Full Lifecycle Financial Services.
Full Lifecycle Financial Services sounds very bureaucratic. What is that?
Well, it utilizes bonds and equity investments to funnel cash. But the absolute masterstroke here is specialized robot insurance.
Robot insurance? Wait, really?
Yeah. Local municipalities are actively instructed to design and subsidize insurance policies specifically tailored for humanoid robots.
Oh, wow. That completely changes the psychology of the factory manager.
Totally.
If the robot fumbles a battery pack and shuts down the conveyor belt for an hour, the manager doesn't lose their bonus or their job. The insurance absorbs the financial blow of the downtime.
It de-risks the entire experiment. But beyond insurance, there's another financial engine supercharging this rollout, and that's the aggressive push for Rise.
Rise Robot as a Service.
Exactly. The directive actively discourages factories from buying these machines outright, which would require massive capital expenditure.
I love the analogy for Rise because it just makes it so tangible. Think about a giant, high-end commercial printer in a corporate office. Very few companies actually buy a $20,000 printer. They lease the machine from a provider and pay a fraction of a cent per page printed.
And the RAS model applies that exact same logic to humanoids.
It's like a giant walking office printer. You don't buy the $10,000 machine. You just pay per page printed, or in this case, per battery packed.
Right. You essentially subscribe to its labor.
Mm-hmm.
And this model completely eliminates the initial financial barrier for smaller and mid-sized businesses. They don't need a huge budget to adopt cutting-edge automation.
Which is huge for adoption.
Huge. And this institutional backing has set the financial markets on absolute fire.
I bet.
Investors are looking at a state-backed, guaranteed pipeline of demand. By early 2026, humanoid companies like Unitree, Engine AI, and Linkerbot are aggressively racing toward massive IPOs fueled by this guaranteed runway.
But wait, I have to pause and push back on the reality of this, though.
Okay, lay it on me.
We are talking about state-mandated quotas and a strict November 30 deadline. Human nature suggests that if you force a factory manager to adopt a robot by a certain date, aren't they just going to lease the absolute cheapest model available, stick it in a dark corner of the warehouse to satisfy the regulators, and go back to running their business normally?
It's a fair point.
Like, do these machines actually do real productive work, or is this just a giant expensive box-checking exercise?
That is the most critical skepticism to hold, and the source text we're analyzing acknowledges that exact risk of performative compliance.
But we don't have to speculate about whether the work is real.
We don't.
No, we can look directly at a deployment from December 2025 on the floor of the world's largest battery maker.
Oh, let's zoom into CATL's Luoyang Zhengzhou battery plant.
Yes.
And this isn't just any factory, right? It's classified as a highly automated lighthouse factory, meaning it's already at the absolute bleeding edge of manufacturing tech.
It is. And standing right on the active line is a humanoid named Moz One.
Yeah, Moz One is the flagship product of a startup called Spirit AI. And the timeline here is just staggering. Spirit AI was only founded in January of 2024.
2024? That's barely any time at all.
Less than 2 years later, their machine is executing one of the most dangerous high voltage tasks on the entire assembly line.
It's handling the final testing phase. The robot is physically inserting high-voltage test connectors and checking the wiring architecture before the massive battery packs are cleared to leave the facility.
Right.
This is a role where human error can result in lethal high-voltage electrocution.
And the performance metrics for Moz One in this role are phenomenal. The deployment data shows Moz One achieving a 99%+ success rate in connector insertion.
99%.
And it is operating 3 times faster than a highly skilled human technician. Most importantly, it achieved zero failure mass production on specific lines, even when the multi-ton battery packs coming down the conveyor belt were slightly shifted or misaligned.
See, that is the part I don't get. How is a machine physically managing that? If a rigid robot expects a plug to be at an exact coordinate and the battery is shifted by half an inch, the robot usually just smashes the plug against the metal casing and destroys the part.
Normally, yes.
But the hardware specs mention that Moz One has 26 force control joints. What does force control actually mean in practice?
Force control is the difference between a machine acting like a mindless piston and acting like a human arm.
Okay.
A standard robotic joint just moves to point B, regardless of what is in the way. A force control joint, though, is loaded with highly sensitive torque sensors.
So it can feel resistance?
Yes. As Maz 1 goes to insert the high voltage plug, if it meets unexpected physical resistance because the socket is slightly off-center, the sensors detect that friction instantly.
So instead of ramming the plug forward, it stops, assesses the resistance, and physically wiggles the connector into place, exactly the way you or I would if we were plugging a charger into the wall in the dark.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is that navigating that tactile feedback requires a sophisticated brain. Spirit AI utilizes a VLA model.
VLA, vision, language, action, right.
Correct. Historically, if you wanted a robot to pick up an object, a human engineer had to manually write thousands of lines of code dictating the exact angle and torque of every single motor for that specific movement.
Which is incredibly brittle. If the object changes shape, all that code is totally useless.
Completely. But with a VLA model, the paradigm shifts entirely. The robot uses its internal cameras to visually take in the environment. It processes that visual data alongside a natural language command like plug in the red cable.
And then what?
The AI dynamically translates that understanding directly into fluid physical action on the fly, generating the necessary joint movements in real time without needing pre-programmed waypoints.
And this VLA model, which Spirit AI just named Spirit, it isn't just some localized success.
No, not at all.
On a major global evaluation platform called RoboArena, which was created by researchers from Berkeley, Stanford, and NVIDIA to rigorously test real-world robotic models, the Spirit model actually took the number one spot for a period.
It did. It actually beat massive legacy models like NVIDIA's Cosmos 3 and Physical Intelligence's Pizer 0.5.
That is wild.
And that level of software validation triggered a massive financial response. This wasn't just a cool demo. By the spring of 2026, Spirit AI pulled in billions of RMB in funding, backed by industrial titans like CATL, Bosch, and major venture capital firms like Sequoia China.
They proved extreme adaptable precision in a high-stakes role.
Exactly.
Okay, so Maz 1 undeniably proves extreme precision in a stationary role. But standing in one spot, plugging in cables, is only a fraction of factory work.
Right.
What happens when you need robots moving around, coordinating with each other in a massive space? You know, a true manufacturing floor has moving forklifts, human workers walking around, heavy machinery operating simultaneously.
For that, we shift from single-task precision at CATL to multi-machine collaboration. We move over to Geely's Zephyr 5G Smart Factory, which manufactures electric vehicles.
Oh, this brings the robotics company UbiTech into the spotlight.
Yes.
The founder of UbiTech, Zhuji An, has a really fascinating approach. He very publicly declared that the era of showmanship is over. No more backflips for investors. He believes these machines belong on the factory floor doing exhausting, repetitive, real work.
And he enforced that philosophy by sending his engineering teams into more than 20 domestic auto plants and 30 different manufacturing companies.
Just to watch.
Basically. They weren't there to sell robots. They were there to observe human workers and rigidly define what physical tasks were actually creating bottlenecks before ever finalizing the design of their Walker S2 humanoid.
And the Walker S2 is a serious piece of hardware. I mean, it stands 1.72 meters tall, about 5'7", weighs 76 kilograms, and boasts up to 52 high-performance servo joints.
Yeah.
Why does a robot need 52 separate joints just to work on a car?
Because an automobile chassis is designed entirely around the geometry of the human body.
Oh, that makes sense.
To reach inside a half-assembled car frame, to tighten a bolt at an awkward angle, you need the rotational freedom of a human shoulder, elbow, and wrist. Those 52 servos give the Walker S2 the degrees of freedom required to maneuver in spaces built for people.
And what they are executing at the Zeekr plant is wild. It's not just one robot operating in a silo.
No, it's a fleet.
Multiple Walker S2 units are deployed across various zones, coordinating with each other and the factory's legacy equipment. And they achieve this through integration with a massive internal 5G network.
Over 100 dedicated 5G connection points, actually. It allows the robots to communicate their positions and task status with zero latency.
And the efficiency gains are tangible. Yeah. By integrating the Walker S2 fleet into the battery module assembly process, the factory reduced its batch production cycle time by a massive 15%.
And in the automotive industry, shaving 15% off production time equates to hundreds of millions in additional output.
But, okay, here's where it gets really interesting. The metric that absolutely blew my mind was the power management.
Oh, the battery swap?
Yes. The Walker S2 features a 3-minute autonomous battery swap. When the robot detects its power running low, it doesn't wander over to a charging dock and plug itself into a wall for 4 hours.
Right.
It walks to a station, ejects its depleted battery, clicks a fully charged one into its torso, and goes right back to the assembly line in 3 minutes. That's like a Formula One pit stop for robots. They don't have to clock out for a 4-hour charge, meaning the factory never ever sleeps.
That is exactly it. The math on that battery swap fundamentally alters the economics of manufacturing.
Because humans need breaks.
Right, a human worker legally requires breaks, mealtimes, shift changes. If a standard robot requires a 4-hour charge, that is 4 hours of dead capital where the machine produces zero value. But with a 3-minute swap, you achieve true, unbroken 24/7 continuous operation.
And the scale of this deployment is just dizzying. UbiTech delivered over 500 units directly to factory floors in 2025 alone.
And by December 2025, they celebrated the 1,000th Walker S2 rolling off their own production line in Luzhou.
1,000 units.
They secured a record-breaking 264 million RMB single order from a local government in Fangchengang. Even Foxconn, the absolute titan of global electronics manufacturing that builds iPhones, they brought in UbiTech robots to work alongside their own proprietary machines for logistics verification.
Okay, but manufacturing cars and batteries still happens in highly structured environments. The floors are flat, the lighting is consistent, the parts are generally uniform.
True.
To truly push the boundaries of embodied AI, what about a truly chaotic environment where every single item is a different shape and weight?
For that, we have to move to the sprawling world of logistics and parcel sorting.
Ah.
Our sources highlight a Tsinghua University spin-off called Roboterra. They deploy their humanoids into the massive logistics hubs operated by China Post and SF Express, the largest state-owned and private logistics networks in the country.
These robots are stationed at moving conveyor belts, tasked with sorting a never-ending stream of random parcels.
Exactly. And think about the physical challenge of grasping in a logistics center.
It's hard.
It's the Moravec paradox in action. It's easy to teach an AI to play chess, but incredibly difficult to teach it to pick up a floppy poly bag containing a t-shirt, immediately followed by a heavy, rigid cardboard box wrapped in reflective tape.
Right, the visual and tactile variables are just endless.
Endless. But by deploying into these hot, humid, chaotic warehouses, Roboterra achieved what is arguably the most vital milestone we're discussing today. They reached PMF.
Product market fit. In hardware engineering, PMF is the holy grail.
It really is. Let's break down what PMF actually means for a logistics company.
Well, it means the robot transitions from being this costly R&D science project to being a predictable spreadsheet calculation.
That is the perfect way to frame it. Before PMF, deploying a robot is an experiment. Once you hit product market fit, you have stable, quantifiable metrics.
You know exactly what you're getting.
Right. You know exactly how many irregular parcels that specific robot can identify, grip, and sort per hour with what error rate.
And once you have that concrete number, a chief financial officer can sit down, run the math, and calculate the exact ROI return on investment of deploying a Roboterra unit versus hiring a human worker for the night shift.
And when the math works, adoption explodes. After PMF was confirmed, SF Express, the very company utilizing the robots in their warehouses, led a massive funding round of over $200 million for Roboterra in April 2026.
Wow.
By Q2 2026, Roboterra wasn't just shipping prototypes anymore. They were shipping functional units by the thousands, experiencing 300% quarter-over-quarter growth.
So what does this all mean for the rest of the world? I'm looking at this massive domestic scale, batteries, cars, logistics. Is this just a closed loop Chinese experiment?
Not at all. It is spilling over globally, and in highly sensitive sectors, too. To see the global spillover, we actually traveled to Ipoh, Malaysia.
Oh, June 16, 2026.
Yes. The National Neurorobotics and Rehab Center officially opened its doors.
And the core technology powering that entire National Rehabilitation Center is a 10 million RMB contract won by a Shanghai-based robotics firm called Fourier.
Right. They deployed their GRX series humanoid robots integrated with a proprietary system called Metamodus Galileo, specifically to help patients recover from severe spinal cord and brain injuries.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, how did they get that contract?
That's the critical insight. Fourier did not win this by simply being cheap Chinese hardware.
Right. The medical field does not gamble with patient safety.
Never. Starting in late 2025, Fourier ran an exhaustive 8-month clinical trial, successfully treating over 1,000 patients with severe mobility impairments.
So they had to prove extreme safety, efficacy, and clinical value to pass strict foreign medical regulations.
Exactly. You don't just walk into another country's national healthcare system and ask to test your robot on a stroke patient. They proved their technology is robust enough for arguably the most highly regulated high-stakes environment on Earth.
Human healthcare. Seeing this global expansion makes me wonder how other tech powerhouses are responding to this aggressive strategy. What is everyone else doing?
The sources provide a stark, impartial comparison by looking at South Korea's policy response. And just to be clear, we are strictly acting as impartial reporters of this comparison here, not endorsing either side's political philosophy.
Right, we're just looking at the strategic differences.
Exactly. In May 2026, South Korea's Ministry of Science and ICT announced their own humanoid initiative, committing 50.4 billion Korean won calls, won by 2030, to develop an AI humanoid.
And their stated goal is to get those domestic robots into hospital trials by 2029. But the research highlights a massive friction point that South Korea and honestly many Western nations face, the regulatory bottleneck.
Putting a fully autonomous humanoid into a public hospital or a commercial restaurant in South Korea requires navigating an incredible labyrinth of oversight.
You have strict labor laws protecting human workers, intense liability debates over who is legally at fault if a robot accidentally injures someone, and mandated regulatory sandboxes.
Right. A sandbox being a highly controlled artificial environment where the robot has to operate flawlessly for years before regulators ever allow it to touch the chaotic real world.
The divergence in strategy is absolute. South Korea is prioritizing technological superiority developed safely within controlled test beds, operating at the speed of a deliberate regulatory environment.
Meanwhile, China's strategy is utilizing the power of the state to bulldoze those early regulatory hurdles, forcing the machines into the real world immediately, finding out what physically breaks, and fixing the hardware on the fly.
Which brings us to the concept of edge AI. Edge AI means the artificial intelligence processing happens directly on the device on the edge of the network, rather than sending data back and forth to a distant cloud server.
Which is crucial for robots.
Yeah. A moving robot cannot afford a 2-second cloud latency delay to realize a human just stepped in front of it. It needs to think instantly. But to train that edge AI to react to a million different physical anomalies, it needs millions of hours of real-world data.
And the consequence of this divergence is a massive accelerating data gap. If one ecosystem is gathering real-world data exponentially faster from tens of thousands of deployed units, the resulting gap in AI capability becomes mathematically impossible to close.
You just cannot use a computer simulation to catch up to an ecosystem that is learning from the messy physics of the real world every single second of the day.
No, you really can't.
Which brings us to the bottom line of this entire deep dive. The era of the cool robot demo is dead.
Long dead.
The new era of humanoids is defined by ruthless, incredibly boring, but vital metrics like parcels per hour, 99% connector insertion rates, and 3-minute battery swaps to keep an auto factory running 24/7.
That reality proves that Xijing Shixin real scene, real training is far more than a clever bureaucratic catchphrase. It is a full-scale industrial mobilization.
It perfectly aligns aggressive government mandates, innovative financial safety nets like Reyes and robot insurance, and cutting-edge hardware into a single unified data-gathering engine.
It is an engine meticulously designed to conquer the physical world in the exact same way that software conquered the digital world over the last 2 decades.
Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to ponder long after we wrap up today. We have established that whoever gathers the most real-world data will inevitably build the smartest physical AI.
Right.
But here is the deeper question. If the future of artificial intelligence depends entirely on physical, real-world data, and one ecosystem holds a massive monopoly on the real-world environments where that data is gathered, who ultimately owns the physical future of AI?
That is the defining question that every technology hub on the planet is going to have to answer. And they are quickly running out of time to figure it out.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the consensus and remember to stay insanely curious.